One of the things we're talking a lot about on the show is remote work and how culture matters. I wanted to talk to someone who's focused on building that. James Laws talks about his Circles fulfillment model on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. I always find that the best place to start is to get a little bit of background on who you are, and particularly as you're an entrepreneur, what your kind of entrepreneurial journey has been. You want to give us that, you know, overview of what have you done and how you got here?
Sure. It's funny. I started my very first business when I was 18. It was Turtle and Hair Designs. It was a t-shirt company. It never got further than the DBA. So I created a bank account, did all that. And then I didn't really know what I was doing. But it kind of lit a fire under me to want to start new things. I then went on a really long journey of working every job you can imagine under the sun. I've worked at a children's nursery. I've worked at a plant nursery. I've worked in grocery stores, janitorial services. I sold vacuum cleaners door to door. And before I got into business, I actually pastored a church for 10 years. So I've done a lot of stuff kind of in the journey, and all of them had this kind of, in a way, these kind of entrepreneurial nuggets in them, door-to-door sales. Leading a church is everything a business is. Like, there's so many components of it that are, it's a business, whether we like it or not. Some people may not find that a little more distasteful, but the truth is, it's all the components of running a business. So I kind of went through that process until I found myself, I had landed working as a web administrator for a regional credit union and ended up doing a project as a favor to my then CEO to work on a website for Junior Achievement of Chattanooga. They were needing some services. And so I started working on that. And I started to solve a problem that I was having with the website, which was when I was building web forms, I didn't want to have to keep creating them over and over and over again, and all the programming and all the stuff. And I didn't want them to keep coming to me to build forms necessarily. I was one of those designers that, like, I wanted to build a website, hand it off, and then go work on the next thing. I didn't necessarily want to be supporting the project over and over and over again, which is a different way to go and is a great way to go. But I didn't want to do that. So I built an automated tool, a way that they could build their own forms and handle the processing themselves, and which then turned into a software product that we started to sell. After a year and a half of doing nothing, it exploded. And then I started dabbling in a lot more. And so now we have coffee shop, I'm doing information and media and just a whole bunch of stuff. So.
And as part of that, you've developed something you call the Circles fulfillment model. Why don't you give me a little bit of an overview of what that is?
Yeah. So the name is a work in progress. As most entrepreneurs generally discover when you start a business, you do something that you love, right? You love designing things. You love sales. You love something, engineering, whatever it is. You love doing that thing. And if you're successful at it, you end up finding yourself hiring people. And when you start hiring people, you realize you stop doing the thing that you loved doing, and you start having to manage people, manage culture, thinking about systems and all of that stuff. And most entrepreneurs burn out because that's not the thing they ever wanted to do. They just wanted to keep designing. Well, I was one of these unique people that when that happened, I found out that's the thing I wanted to do. Like, the managing people and the thinking about systems and structure and all of that is my sweet spot. Like, that's where I really enjoy and get energized. Well, in that process, I started to realize, like, the reason I started a business was to find fulfillment. Now, I can't define what fulfillment looks like for every person. Some people will design it as a flexible schedule and financial freedom and, like, all of these different things you might describe. But what I had discovered in myself and the people who worked with me is that they had three general characteristics they were able to say. There may have been other things, but these three things always existed. And that is, they loved what they did. They could say, I love what I do. They could say, I believe what I do matters, like, it's important. And I can see the impact that I have on that thing that matters. When they were able to say those things, I found that fulfillment. So I started to ask myself, how do I help my team, not just me as the entrepreneur? That's sometimes where we start. How do I find fulfillment? But how do I find fulfillment for my team? And so it started me on this journey of kind of developing this idea of what does fulfillment look like and what are the ingredients and how do we make it happen?
So is it a system? Like, is it a process? Is it a culture building? Give me a little bit more of, I'm trying to dive into understanding what it is. I understand what it does, what it's for, but what is it in terms of implementation?
It is, you know, it's on the first level of it, it is a philosophy. Then it's starting to develop now into an operating system. So, because what we've done is we realized somewhere along the line in my company, we had this conversation. We've had lots of conversation about our values and who we are as a company. And what I found is I have a tenure of employee that really is outlasting the average tenure of a tech company because people love the culture that we've developed. So what we started to do is reverse engineer what we've been doing for the last 10 years, reverse engineered and say, well, how did we get here? How do we get to a place where people are like, I get hit up for jobs all the time and people who want to pay me even more money, but I don't want to leave this culture. Like, I don't want to leave what we have here. It's special and it's not worth making 20, 30% more in annual salary to leave what's been developed here. So we started to reverse engineer it and turn it into a system. So it starts with what do we want is fulfillment. Then how do we measure it? Once we measure it, we have to start talking about then how do we produce that? Because ultimately these three things, I love what I do, I believe what I do matters, and I can see the impact that it has. We're talking about passion, purpose, and progress, right? We're saying, I have this passion, I have this purpose, I have this I'm seeing the progress that I'm making. But here's what I know as a leader, like I can't give someone purpose. I can cast a vision. I can explain a mission. I can do that, but I can't give someone purpose. I can't make someone passionate. I can't make somebody have progress. But what are the things I can do? And that's where we kind of zoom out into this operating system.
But isn't what fulfills each person different? Like, aren't we and how do you consolidate or match that idea that everyone's fulfillment's individual, yet with a system to pull it all together?
Well, so one thing that I talk a lot about is this idea of work-life balance or work-life integration. We live in a world right now where there's a whole group of people that are saying, you know, I'm looking for work-life balance. And what that ultimately generally means is I want to keep my work separate from my life and my life separate from my work. First of all, I think that's miserable. Because I don't want to go home and not be able to talk about my work with my wife and bring that experience into my home and into my other areas of my life. And vice versa, it's unrealistic to think that people just check their personal lives at the door when they come to work. I believe in more of a holistic approach that when I hire somebody, I'm hiring the whole person. I'm hiring everything that they are, all of their experiences, all of their background, all of their challenges. I bring that all. And all of those things actually makes them a better person to work with, not a worse person to work with. And so in that process of thinking about fulfillment, you're right. Fulfillment means a lot of the different things to a lot of different people. And what I propose is people who are fully fulfilled, meaning they don't feel like they're wasting a third of their life at work to spend, you know, to have money to live the life that they want to live. They're able to integrate work into the wholeness of their lives. And in order to do that in a work culture, they need those three things. And if those three things don't exist at work, they're not going to find fulfillment in all those other things. That's been my experience. I'm sure there are edge cases that may prove me wrong.
Sure. I mean, but so walk me through a little bit about how this is implemented. Where does it start?
So one of the things that we do is as a part of our employee evaluations every quarter, we actually ask those very questions. We ask them on a scale of 1 to 4, and those have meanings like rarely or mostly, or, you know, on a scale of 1 to 4, we ask every team member those three questions. And we don't let anyone say I'm in the middle. You got to choose. I'm a little more or a little less, because we can't do anything with neutral. But I can do something if you're a little less. I can start to poke at that. So one of the first things we do is we evaluate, we measure, and we say, ask every individual in your own way. And we have some verbiage to describe what we mean by passion, what we mean by purpose, what we mean by progress. How do you measure yourself? Because I can't measure your fulfillment. I can only measure my fulfillment. And so we ask everyone to measure it as it pertains to their work and their in the wholeness of their lives. How do they find themselves on these scales?
Is this led by HR? Is it led by leadership? How does this process work?
So our people ops department generally will send out these surveys. They are not anonymous because they are conversation starters. Our assessments are not like you're good, you're bad, you're getting a raise, you're not getting a raise. They are conversation starters that says, how are you feeling? Do you feel healthy? Do you feel like the organization is helping you be healthy? And if not, let's have those conversations and let's figure out how we fix that. So answering these survey questions are conversation starters, and they start with their managers. So it's team members with their managers having real heart-to-heart conversations about, I'm struggling with the work. The role doesn't fit me. There's a lot of stuff that I don't like and only 20% of the stuff I do like. How do we change that? Because we're not getting the best use of a person if they hate 80% of what they do. So how do we fix that? And so it starts with a conversation, and it is initiated with people ops, moves into management, and then it actually goes all the way up the chain and to the owners and the executives as we kind of figure out, okay, as an organization, do we have a problem or how do we capitalize on what we're doing really, really well at?
Have you found any sort of sweet spots on the communication? I'll sort of say with a smile, well, we know daily's probably too much, and we know that yearly is probably not often enough. Have you got any insights on sweet spots of communication like this?
Well, we do our evaluations quarterly. And our reason for that is exactly what you said. A year is way too long. Too much stuff happens in a year. You can't course correct. Like if they're already on the downturn of fulfillment in February or March, by the end of the year, you've already lost them. Like it's over. The coming back from that is difficult. By doing it quarterly, we give ourselves a little bit of a cadence of, hey, it takes more than a month or two to actually make a change and make a difference. If we are trying to improve something, you're not going to see it in a week. You're not going to necessarily see it in 2 weeks, but you might see it in a quarter. So we can start to see the trends. And that's what we're really looking for. We're looking for trends. Are we trending down? Are we trending up? Is there a concern? And we have those conversations, but quarterly seems to be our sweet spot.
What surprised you most by working on this and rolling it out? What's the piece that surprised you the most?
When you as a leader take an extreme interest in helping your team find fulfillment, you will never find team members who take more ownership. By us removing all the clutter and saying, we want to remove all of the barriers that make you unfulfilled. And for us, that meant making, flexible work schedules and, unlimited sick time. And we have these things like let you live your best life and don't make you choose, do I get my work done or do I live my best life? No, you can do both because you do it when you do it best. You make your schedule. We don't make your schedule. We have no office hours. Do your thing. But making those decisions and focusing on fulfillment of the team, what surprised me was there's a lot less micromanagement necessary. Management becomes less necessary on a micro level because teams have ownership. Individuals who feel fulfilled, who believe that their work matters, can see the impact of their work and love their work. When that's true, there's very little like micromanagement that even needs to take place. Not that that's a good practice anyway, but you find it very unnecessary because teams just take charge. They give ideas. They're invested. They care about the success of the organization because the organization cares about their success.
So has this impacted the way you're measuring work? This is one of those areas that gets explored a lot, and many managers, particularly ones that focus on micromanagement, are very time-oriented.
Yeah.
What have you seen been the outcomes on the way you measure work?
Well, that biggest transition happened for us when we transitioned from being an on-site co-located team to moving to a fully remote distributed team. When we made that transition, we realized we had very bad management practices for determining what work was getting done. We fell into the same trap that I think a lot of people fall into is butts in the seat, in front of the computer, they must be doing work. They must be getting stuff done. And we didn't have any really good measurements for determining that. We have to step back in a more open culture. You have to step back and say, expectations and goals, the things that we want to get done, are a collaborative effort between managers and leaders and their team. we agree on what the outcomes are. And as long as we're in agreement, we set our deadlines. And then if the work gets done, I don't care how long it takes you to get done because we agreed on the outcome. And if that's the outcome, we said that this is what the business needs. And the employee says that's reasonable and I can do that. And they get it done in, you know, 3 hours a day. I don't check that. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me because we agreed on the outcome. Now, if we have a conversation, we determine we could be doing more. And here's the thing. When team members are fulfilled, they don't give you 3 hours a day and just do the bare minimum and get the outcome done. They come up back with more ideas. They come up with yes, and what if we do this? We can push this a little bit further. But ultimately, we've changed our measurements to say it's a collaborative effort. We set clear expectations and we set milestones and achievable goals. And as long as those goals are met, we don't care about time.
Now, the biggest pushback I always hear from listeners when I have these conversations is all around service and service desks, right? So, for example, in your business, if you're running a software business, you have support tickets that come in. There is an expectation of response time. And the biggest thing that the listeners always are telling me is like, look, these things are all time dependent. We've got to have responsiveness. We've got to have service hours. What's your take and response to that criticism?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends who run similar businesses and they try to have 24-hour coverage and all of that stuff. What we've done is we set expectations for our customers. And, you know, part of setting good, healthy boundaries for our team is setting those same boundaries and expectations for our customers. So we don't promise, you know, 1 hour turnaround time on a support ticket. It's not realistic. It's not healthy for us. And we get great reviews on our support. We get 5-star reviews all the time because our team members care and they see it through to the end. They take ownership of problems and they push through it. But generally we say you're going to get a response probably in 8 business hours, what you would consider to be like normal office hours, because that gives us enough time to turn around. We have, you know, support people. We have one person in India. We have a lot of people in the US and they work when they want to work. And as long as they're all doing their part on the tickets within their 12-hour, 24-hour time slot that they consider to function, we've never had a problem with it. As long as we set clear expectations to our customers, this is what you're getting. And this is what we're going to do. And when we do touch the ticket, we're going to make sure we take care of you and that you have everything that you need.
Gotcha. Have you worked with people where there's that level of emergency response, right? Where oftentimes there are the incidents that are a crisis, an emergency, where response time is, and I'll at least say perhaps perceived, but oftentimes the customer believes, and if they perceive it, it's the reality. They believe that there is a certain level of urgency to that. Have you worked with organizations like that? And how are you kind of implementing this and finding it works?
Because we do mostly email support, so we don't do phone support. So that changes the dynamic a little bit. We don't have a network of phone systems that the phone has to go somewhere and redirect somewhere. We're not doing that. It's an email support system. And so the urgency ends up when we see it and they say it's urgent. We treat it as urgent when we see it, but we don't always see it as quickly as sometimes a customer may need. We deal with that. You know, truth be told, that's handled on a case-by-case basis. Our team is really good about, you know, watching the queue sometimes, even when they're not working the queue, just to keep an eye on things and like that may happen because they take ownership. And so by taking that ownership, if they see something, they will usually raise the red flag, let the team know, and start spreading that information around so we can get it taken care of. But the truth is that's every organization kind of has to take their timed constraints and their particular type of business. So if they have a lot of urgent customers, they have to figure out, well, what does this look like then in the confines of a more urgent customer system? It may mean you need more coverage, more people. It may be that maybe you need to raise your prices and have less customers. So you're handling less people, but making the same amount of money and therefore not needing to staff it. There's lots of ways of going about approaching it. I always come down to this, and this is where I started because I wanted to make 24-hour support. I thought that was right. Every time we hired somebody, I'm like, do we have coverage? Do we have this? It wasn't until we went remote that we just kind of threw that all away. And in my process, I kept saying, the problem is it's hard. I don't know how to figure this out. It's hard. But when as leaders do we shy away from hard things? So the challenge is if you have urgent customers, implementing something like this is hard. But it's worth it.
So I want to follow up on something you said earlier and ask your thoughts on this. So you talked about the idea of letting people be their full selves at work, right? And I want to get your take on the downside of that, right? So there is you're inviting, people are messy, and you're inviting a lot of messiness into the environment, and people may not all have the same ideas or the same approaches to this. What's your take on that, particularly because you hear from some business leaders that they don't think it's a great idea to have people's full selves at work? What's your take on how you deal with that messiness?
And that's a great question. And it's a really important topic. We've seen a lot of businesses even like say we shut down things like there's no political chatter. We don't talk politics. And that's a dangerous thing to say, right? Because when you shut down politics, then people who are perhaps underrepresented can't voice when perhaps abuse is taking place because that's political. So you have to be very careful about what you shut down and don't shut down. We've taken the approach that we don't shut down conversation, even if it's political, but we do have values. And I think an organization has to have values that says, this is how our culture operates. And our culture operates on a level of respect. We don't all agree. We have different political affiliations, religious affiliations. We have people from all over that have different cultural, understandings. We have to understand that not all of us see the world the same way. And just because we see the world different doesn't mean we're bad or good or right or wrong. We're just different. And we have to allow for that. So one of the things we do is we say, you can say whatever you want politically, whatever, as long as it doesn't attack a person, it's respectful, and it's not argumentative. We're not trying to sit here and fight with each other. You can have an opinion, but let's not go attacking people. Don't attack people's character. Don't go attacking what somebody believes necessarily. Just, hey, blanket statement. I think this, I feel this, and move on. Let's respect one another. I think it's dangerous when we start shutting down communication. And you're right. People are messy, but our businesses are made of people. And therefore, our businesses are going to be messy. That's just the way it is.
So if somebody was looking to start working on this, where should they get started?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would talk to your team members. If you wanted to say like, hey, I think I want to care about, I do care about my people. And I think, maybe something I said triggered something. You're like, yeah, I really want to care about the lives of my people. Ask them, talk to them, have conversations, open up the lines of communication. A lot of times in businesses, it's leadership talking down to team and the team never really has a voice to talk up. Remove the hierarchy and get on the same level and say, when I started my business, I wanted financial freedom. I wanted to choose my own schedule. I wanted all of these things. I wanted fulfillment. I wanted to do something that mattered to me. I wanted to see the impact that I was having. And every time I interview somebody, I tell myself, this person wants what I wanted. They may want a different version of it. It may look a little different, but they wanted the same things I wanted. So how do I give it to them? How do I bring them into the business and make them feel like I just started a business? I got all this freedom and how do I do that? So start the lines of communication, have that conversation, ask them, how do you feel? You may implement a similar system. We actually, I talk about it on our website and we go through the fulfillment theory. You can ask those questions and ask them how they feel. I talk about the scoring system even, and you can say like, how do you feel? Then when you find out where they are, have dialogue. What is it? Is it about the role? And you know this when you talk about like, are they suffering from a lack of passion? Are they struggling from lack of purpose? Are they struggling from a lack of progress? Most of those things are fixed by leadership, by creating, when we zoom out, by saying, okay, I can't impact those things directly, but I can influence the things that influence those things. And those things are, I can create better clarity of purpose, clarity of vision, clarity of mission, clarity of values. I can create better collaboration, meaning I can make sure there's cross-team functionality and people are talking to each other. I can create better connection, shared experiences among team members, among managers. I can do those things. And when I create clarity, when I prioritize clarity, connection, and collaboration, those other three measurements will start to go up. And so depending on where you're deficient, can kind of tell you where to focus.
If people were interested in getting in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, the best way is, of course, you can look for James Laws on any social media platform and you can connect with me directly. I also do all my content creation, my podcast, Leading to Fulfillment. All of that is on circles.com. And as you said, that's circles with two eyes.
Well, James, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. This was a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.